Shabbat Shalom and welcome to Kehilat Tenuvah, The Harvest, a Messianic Charismatic congregation in Thornton, Colorado. You're listening to the Shabbat message delivered by Senior Pastor Mark McClellan. Our goal is to provide, for free, the message of the Torah from a Messianic Judaic perspective. Here's Pastor Mark.
So, let me get into my message today, and it is actually what it means to be an authentic Messianic community, part two. So we started this 2 weeks ago. Alex was in last week, so we're picking up where we left off from 2 weeks ago. What it means to be an authentic Messianic community. And I just want to recap a little bit. What makes a faith community authentically Messianic versus authentically rabbinic? Whether it's Orthodox, Reform, Conservative, or what makes a Messianic congregation uniquely Messianic in contradistinction to being Catholic or Protestant, for instance, or non-denominational or independent? What does it mean to be a Messianic community? And how do we become an authentic Messianic community? So we started with defining what it means to be Messianic, and we talked a little bit about that and all the flack we got when we first started the Harvest 20 years ago, 20 plus years ago. But a lot of that's been being worked out as people have been kind of refining the definition of these words that we use. And labels can only go so far. They are important, but they can only go so far. When you go to the soup aisle, labels are very important, aren't they? And so this label of Messianic is an important label, although like all labels, it can only go so far. But it's important. We are Messianic. What does that mean, though? And I want to lay out for us some definitions to help us grapple with that so that we know who we are and where we're going. We talked about Jewishness and what it means to be Jewish, and no one's going to sort that one out. They've been struggling for over 2,000 years sorting that out, and from 1948 on, it's been a bigger controversy than ever before. That's not been hammered out yet, and so we're not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. We're not going to define what it means to be Jewish. We'll let the Jews define for themselves what it means to be Jewish. Every ethnic group has a right in self-determining for its people what its own definitions are. Every nation has that right. And so we'll let them work through that. We're going to work with the term Messianic and what that means. Now, let's go to our first slide. If you're not considered Jewish under Jewish law, I highly recommend that you do not call yourself Jewish. We've been in this movement for 20 years full-time and a lot longer part-time. And I want to say right now, there's nothing more offensive than when Gentiles claim to be Jewish. In the eyes of their Jewish brothers and sisters, it's very offensive. I've talked with so many Jewish rabbis, Messianic Jewish rabbis and leaders, and they're very offended at this idea that we would call ourselves Jewish if we're not Jewish, because for them it's a form of identity theft. It's a form of replacement theology. And what happens a lot of times in this movement is we're so hungry and zealous to connect with our roots that we want to be something we're not to gain legitimacy in the very group that we're seeking to be a part of. And that, even though is well-intentioned, in the end, does not really build unity. And so it's important to understand that the Jewish people, as a people, get to determine the definition of Jewishness. And the state of Israel, since 1948, has worked on a working definition to do just that. And so if you're not Jewish under that definition, I recommend don't call yourself Jewish. If you do, you're probably going to be taken to task. And I'll tell you right now, the Jewish people, they themselves, they say, hey, it's hard enough proving we're Jewish. You know, you're going to come along with no genealogy, no ancestry. You're going to say you're one of the tribes of Ephraim? Like, how do you know that? You flipped a coin or something? Someone prophesied over you? That doesn't really work. So let's not do that. Let's not make that mistake. Simply stated, biblically speaking, one of the core definitions of Jewishness is physical descent from Jacob. Physical descent. So, keep that in mind. You might want to do the 23andMe test. you spit and they do the DNA and the, you know, I had this world-renowned, I shouldn't say world-renowned. He's a geneticist who worked on the human genome and is part of the group that is world-renowned. And when this test came out where they can actually determine a little bit about your ancestry that's solid based on genetics, a lot of people were running around after doing this test saying, I'm Jewish. And they were making the claim that they're Jewish based on the DNA. And of course, that didn't fly too well, especially in Israel. And some of the Israeli geneticists basically rebuked a lot of the proponents of that idea. And so I went to him and I talked to him. I said, well, so what is up with that? Why doesn't that work? He says, this is why it doesn't work. Because when you go and you test to find out if you have Jewish ancestry, and then you find a little bit, that could never mean you're Jewish. In fact, if you got a lot more money, I'll test you personally for a lot of other things too. And if you find out, for instance, that you got a lot more Aborigine in you than you have Jewish ancestry, are you going to jump up and down and tell everyone, I'm Aborigine, hey, I'm Aborigine? How come that doesn't work? See, this whole idea of trying to be someone other than who we are is misguided at best and painful at worst. And we don't need to do that, because what we have before us is identity in Messiah. And we need to be who we are in Him. He's saving those among the children of Israel that are responding to His grace through Yeshua. And He's also saving those among the Gentiles who are embracing Yeshua. And together we're becoming the family of God. And we can be proud of who God has made us and what family groups we come from. If everyone became Jewish, and I don't even know if you can, you know, I mean, conversion is not a biblical idea. Kind of a man-made solution. But even if we could go through a little thing that changes from being Gentile to Jewish, and everyone became Jewish, in the end, who did God save? Just the Jews. He had no regard for the nations? Nope, looks like it was just the Jews. God says, I'm going to save the Jews, and through the Jews, I'm going to save the nations. And in the end, there's going to be people from every tribe and language all around the globe joined with my people, and they shall be those whom I have saved, both among the Jews and among the Gentiles. That's God's plan. So, sorting this all out has not been easy, but we're getting closer and closer and closer. Messianic, what does it mean? What does it mean to be messianic? When you say you're messianic, what does that mean, right? It means you're of Messiah. It means you're in the Messiah. It means you're from the Messiah. It means you belong to the Messiah. That's what that term means. It's very simple, but profound. So stated simply, if you truly believe in your heart and embrace Jesus as the Messiah and King of Kings, you are born anew. You're born from above. You've become a child of God. You are truly and profoundly messianic. Whether you're Jewish or Gentile, you are messianic, of Messiah, belonging to Him. Messianic does not mean Jewish. It's not equal to being Jewish. Messianic means you're of Messiah. Outside of Messiah, your racial and ethnic status doesn't mean much in the scope of eternity. Think about that. Doesn't matter if you're Goldberg, Silverberg, or Iceberg. Outside of Messiah, it's not going to mean much in eternity. Do you think you're going to stand before the judge of the universe? And when he says, why should I let you in? And you answer, because I'm Jewish, or I'm Irish, or I'm African, or Latino, I mean, fill in the blank with your best pedigree. You ain't getting in. It's never been based on ethnic status, but rather covenant status. Question is, did you receive my atonement provided through my son's death on the cross? That's the only thing that's going to matter. However, if you are Jewish and you believe in Yeshua as Messiah and King of Kings, you've become a Messianic Jew, a Jew who belongs to Messiah. If you're a Gentile who believes in Yeshua as Messiah and King, you've become a Messianic Gentile. Together, Messianic Jews and Messianic Gentiles comprise the church or the body of Messiah. So what are the main identifiers that mark people as belonging to the church? If the church belongs to Messiah, then the church is Messianic. The church is of Messiah, right? So what are the identifiers that identify a Messianic church or the church of Messiah? This is where we pick up the reading in the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation is all about the revealing of who Jesus is. It's a much greater revelation than what we have even in the Gospels. It's an amazing unfolding and unveiling of who Jesus is and who his people are. So, since this is Hanukkah, the season of Hanukkah, and Hanukkah is not only about dedication, but the festival of lights or revelation, the season of revealing things. Do you realize that during Hanukkah, Jesus revealed himself for the first time as being one with God, as being the Mashiach who is one with God? It was so startling because he had hid that for so long. And it was during Hanukkah in the portico of Solomon when he traveled from Galilee all the way down to Jerusalem to be there during the celebration of Hanukkah, the celebration of light, the celebration of revelation, that in the midst of the celebration of revelation, he says, let me reveal who I am once and for all. So I thought the book of Revelation is a good book to be reading during the season of Hanukkah. So here we are. Let's pick up the reading in verse 12, or chapter 12 and verse 17. What are the main identifiers that mark people as belonging to the church of Messiah? It's the testimony of who Jesus is and fidelity to the commandments of God. Those are the two pillars that mark a church as being authentically messianic. The testimony of who Jesus is, Son of God and Son of Man. And number two, the commandments of God. The commandments of God. Now let me just back up a little bit too. I just want to say this too, because I already picked on the Jews. So if you're Mandela, if your name's Mandela, Martinez, McKenzie, Mulan, or Mighty Bear, outside of Messiah, your ethnic status won't get you anywhere either. Okay, now we can move on. The two main identifiers that mark a Messianic congregation as Messianic is the testimony of who Jesus is and fidelity to the commandments of God. I know that seems very basic. Let me develop it. Revelation 12, 17. So the dragon was enraged with the woman. The woman is a reference to believing Israel. She gave birth to the Messiah. The Messiah comes out of the Jewish people, out of Israel. So the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her children, who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. So this woman is, in fact, believing Israel. Romans 11 talks about Israel through the metaphor of the olive tree. And the olive tree is comprised of, initially, Messianic Jews, Jews who believe in that Jesus is the Messiah. And then later, Messianic Gentiles who are grafted in through their faith in Israel's Messiah. There are many branches that were broken off. These represent Jewish people who rejected Jesus as the Messiah. They are still called Israel, by the way. They are still called Israel, although they're not grafted into this olive tree currently due to the rejection of Messiah. They are spiritually dead in this state. When they repent, they too will be regrafted into their own olive tree. We, the Gentiles, were grafted in for the first time through faith in Messiah, and we become part of this Jewish olive tree as Gentiles, as wild olive branches. Man, I'll tell you what. You know, in the Orthodox community, they wear white tassels on four-cornered garments. You know, we got these tassels, different colors, on our belt loops. There's never been anything as unnerving as that if you're an Orthodox person, right? Like, what? I got stopped at the store. This Orthodox Jewish brother says, What are those? What are those? You know, he's pointing at my tassels. I said, they're tassels. He says, I know they're tassels. He says, what is that? I said, they're tassels. Moses said to put it. He says, I know what Moses said. Don't tell me what Moses said. He was very offended. He wanted to know I had them on the bell loops rather than a four-cornered garment. Now, there's no easy answer, but I got a good one. This one works the best. I've tried a lot of different ones. This one works the best. You know what I say? I said, well, I'm not Jewish. That's like, I'm not Jewish. I'm not Jewish. But I'm grafted into Israel through the Jewish Messiah. And I love the people of Israel. And I don't replace them. I join them. And I put these on my belt loops because, well, I'm kind of a wild olive branch, so to speak. I'm not cultivated like you. I'm wild. And then if they want to talk a little bit about that whole phenomenon, if they're open to the discussion, then you can actually at some point move to the text and say, well, the text doesn't say four-cornered garments anyway. It says edges. That's the weightier understanding of that text through the eyes of Jewish scholars. It's the edges of your garments that you put those blue threads in because they were fringed garments back in the days of Moses. And today I don't wear a robe. I'm sure you're glad, right? And my bell loops are right along my seams. And if I take my seams out, you end up with four corners on my pants that are seamed together there. And at the corners of my garments on this loop is a great place to put my tassels. And that's how the wild children do it. So anyway, I don't know how we got there, but we did. So the woman, believing Israel, she is the one who the enemy is enraged with. She has given birth to this Messiah, and he goes off to make war with her because the child is rescued, if you read Revelation, and is caught up to heaven, which is the ascension of Yeshua. So he goes off to make war with her and to make war with the rest of her children. This great red dragon is none other than Satan. He pursues Messianic Jews, the remnants of Israel. There's always been a remnant in every generation. The church started at Sinai with Moses. There's always been a remnant of believing Jews who have always, always put their faith in Messiah. And of course, today, just like in every generation, there are Messianic Jews. They are the Israel of God. We are grafted in to the Israel of God. We are the Messianic Gentiles grafted in. And what identifies these children as belonging to Yeshua? What identifies them as the elect of God, the Israel of God? Faithfully testifying who Jesus is and keeping the commandments of God. So in Revelation 14:12, it restates it a little bit different. The Revelator says, here's the perseverance of the saints. In the midst of all the turmoil, the crisis, the spiritual warfare, the martyrdom, all of the stuff going on, right? In this tribulation that's been like none other. It says, here is the perseverance. Here are those who have made it through. Who are they? Here are the saints who keep the commandments of God and their faith in Jesus. Those are the hallmarks, two of them. That's what makes a Messianic church, in contradistinction to other churches or synagogues. The synagogue embraces the commandments of God, but they reject the Messiah. They don't believe that Jesus is the Messiah. And most of the church believes Jesus is the Messiah, but they reject or neglect some basic, central commandments of God. So let's talk about this. Commandments of God. Can we at least summarize them as the Big Ten? I know people get nervous when you start talking about the commandments of God. Well, which ones? Well, how about the Big Ten? We'll start with the Big Ten. Does anyone here believe in the Big Ten, right? In fact, Deuteronomy 4:13 says this. So he declared to you, Moses speaking to the children of Israel, so he declared to you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform. He declared to you the covenant. He told you, do the covenant. Stay faithful to the covenant. Embrace the covenant. Walk in the covenant. What is the covenant? That is the Ten Commandments. And he wrote them on two tablets of stone. So is it too much to expect the church to embrace and keep at minimum the Big Ten? Is that like asking too much? It's just crazy nowadays. Do you realize we have entire denominations that are saying we're not even obliged to keep even the Ten under the new covenant? Denominations are saying this today. In fact, how do you get to the place where your leaderships now are basically, we're so far removed. I can't even believe we have these discussions. It's just amazing. Okay, so let me just backtrack a little bit. When I ask Christians if they believe in the Ten Commandments, you know what most of them answer? Yes. They say yes. Of course we do. Of course we believe in the Ten. Who wouldn't believe in the Ten, right? So then I say, okay, well, what about the Third Commandment? Well, which one's that? You know, to remember the Sabbath, to keep it holy, and to observe it. Oh, well, yeah, well, that one's done away with. Oh, okay, so I guess you believe in the Nine Commandments. You don't really believe in the Ten, you believe in the Nine, is that right? Well, yeah, I guess I'd believe in the Nine. Okay, well, what about One and Two? Which forbid us to use pagan forms of worship or any religious syncretism in our worship. What about that? Well, we don't know much about that. Besides, we think it's all been redeemed by the cross. Okay, then, let's add that. You would actually believe in the seven commandments of God. Not really the nine, the seven. You're kind of a seven commandment type person, right? And then what about commandment number four, not taking God's name in vain, i.e. saying that you believe in God, but neglect worshiping him in spirit and truth and not with pagan forms of worship? Oh, we believe that God just looks at the heart. Oh, okay. That's okay. I'm not upset. Just trying to sort this out. You actually believe in the six commandments. Six commandments, not nine, not eight, not seven, but six. And I could go further because some in the church are actually even doing away with other ones. It's just astonishing. It's the age we're living in. It's the spirit of lawlessness, less and less law. You're getting farther and farther away incrementally in every generation. My question is this: at what point in neglecting or rejecting the central commandments of God do you start to lose the identifying mark of God on your life that reveals that you are of Messiah? At a given point, you no longer have the earmarks that you are messianic. You might have the earmarks that you're Catholic, Orthodox, Protestant. You know, they all have their own marks of identity. Hello? Messianic is a person that says, I am of Messiah. And according to John the Revelator, he's made it very clear that his elect are those that believe in the Messiah and the commandments of God. Those are the pillars. Without either one, you can't claim to be messianic. You can claim to be a lot of other things, but you can't claim to be messianic. So becoming an authentic messianic congregation or community, in summary, requires a radical commitment to the following two prioritized core values. Our testimony that Jesus is the Messiah, Son of Man and Son of God. Revelation chapter 1, he is the real deal. Man, no wonder people fall like dead men at his feet. Look at who he is, right? Son of Man, Son of God. And number two, the commandments of God. Faithfulness to the covenant. At least the Big Ten. At least just the Big Ten, right? Skip down to slide 35. 1 John says this. By this we know that we have come to know him, if we keep his commandments. The one who says, I've come to know him, and does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, in him the love of God has been truly perfected. By this we know that we are in him. The one who says he abides in him ought himself to walk in the same manner that he walked. The number one most popular title given to the Messiah by the disciples of the disciples. In other words, John's disciples, Peter's disciples, that second generation. You know their number one title that was given to Messiah? You know what they called him? The Torah. They referred to Jesus as the Torah. He was the living Torah. You could look at him and see what it's like for a human being to be embracing and walking out the Torah. He is the living Torah. So of course, in him we find the grace of God, the forgiveness of God, the atonement of God. And in him we also find a model for a holy life, a life that's in line with the Torah. We're to walk as he walked, in the manner that he walked. He walked in the Torah, the beauty of God's instructions. So when we get down to the message in Revelation, it starts in Revelation chapter 2, 13 through 17. We're going to pick it up there. I'm going to come back to Smyrna later, but I want to jump into this part today. Revelation 2, 13 through 17. And to the angel of the church in Pergamum write, the one who has a sharp two-edged sword says this, I know where you dwell, where Satan's throne is, and you hold fast my name and did not deny my faith even in the days of Antipas, my witness, my faithful one, who was killed among you where Satan dwells. They killed the messenger of this community of Pergamum. He was the bishop. He was the overseer of all these congregations in this city. And they were persecuting the believers. And they decided to put fear in the whole community by killing the leader. And Jesus is saying, I'm proud of you. Because even in that fierce persecution where people were losing their lives and where they took out my faithful witness, you continued to proclaim who I am. You continue to testify. I'm proud of you. You've done a good job. This is so important for us to understand. We are called to be a witnessing community. We're called to share the glory of Jesus. We don't have to be embarrassed or ashamed of Jesus. I'll tell you what, I don't need to be accepted by the Orthodox community. I love the Orthodox community. I love Orthodox or rabbinic forms of Judaism and my brothers and sisters who are a part of that. But I'm not going to hide Jesus in order to gain some acceptance. I'm proud of Jesus. I'm going to tell everyone about Jesus. He's the Son of Man, Son of God. In him is the atonement of God. He's the glory of Israel. And if it results in us being persecuted or oppressed or losing jobs or losing family and friends, so be it. It's nothing compared to what they went through. But Jesus expects us to be a church that testifies about him. This next year, I want us to become very good at sharing our faith, individually and as a community. Let's step it up. Let's ramp it up. This is one of the very things that makes us who we are. Verse 14, but I have a few things against you, because you have there some who hold to the teaching of Balaam, who kept teaching Balak to put a stumbling block before the sons of Israel, and to eat things sacrificed to idols and to commit acts of immorality. He says, you know what? You're doing really good. I got a problem with you, though. I got something against you. You've bought into this teaching of Balaam. Now, I don't have time to develop it. I'll pick this up next week. But suffice it to say, it's like the teaching of the Nicolaitans, and it's also akin to the teaching of Jezebel. So next week, go and read about Balaam. It's in Numbers, chapter about 22 through about chapter 30. But it picks up its momentum and finds a crescendo in chapter 25 of Numbers. Go and look what the teaching of Balaam was, because that teaching is alive and well in these churches. And I'll tell you, they're alive and well today in our churches. And the teaching of Balaam, short and simple, is this. You don't have to be concerned about the commandments. It's about your heart. It's about being spiritual. You're under grace. It doesn't matter. Why be all worked up on these things that divide us? Why can't we all just get along, tolerate, show acceptance, and kind of not worry about the law? When you pick this up and read it next week, I'll develop it. I'll bring it back to what John is saying here in the book of Revelation. It's astonishing. Very relevant. If we're going to be truly authentically messianic, then we're going to have to be in love with Jesus and the law. A love affair with him first and foremost, and then the law. And live it out, regardless of the cost and price we have to pay. Amen? Shabbat shalom. We'll pick it up next week.
Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, this is the way you shall bless the children of Israel. Say to them, may Yahweh bless you and keep you. May Yahweh make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May Yahweh lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. And we add, in the name of Yeshua our Messiah, the Prince of Peace, so you shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them." Yivarech Adonai Veishmerecha, Yaher Adonai Panavalecha Veihunecha, Isa Adonai Panavalecha Ve'asemlecha shalom. Shabbat shalom.
You've been listening to the Shabbat message delivered by Senior Pastor Mark McClellan. We hope you have found this teaching relevant and challenging for your life. If you are in the Metro Denver area, please join us on Shabbat. Service starts at 1 p.m. and ends at 3 p.m. Kehila Tenuva is located at 8891 Pose Boulevard in Thornton, Colorado, just a few miles north of downtown Denver. For more information, please visit www.graftedin.com. That's www.graftedin.com. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 29993, Thornton, Colorado, 80229. For inquiries, please call 303-761-9948 or email info@graftedin.com. Thank you for listening to the Shabbat message. Shabbat shalom and Shavua tov. Shabbat.